Hi folks, in this cast, Ian and I discuss the slate of releases posted for the summer, mostly as published by the UK Film Distributors Association on their Launching Films website. Although we do have a fairly good record of predicting the future when it comes to the tentpoles, we couldn't possibly anticipate on February 15th, when we recorded this episode, that the latest much-anticipated James Bond release would be pushed back out of our summer window, February to October. So we discuss No Time to Release in April, as I believe the film has been retitled, as if it's going to release imminently, as we believed it would at the time. This wouldn't be so much of an issue, except Ian boldly picked the film as his summer turkey, and so has managed to win that part of the game before the end of March. In order to keep the spirit of competition alive, he has since changed his turkey pick to his second choice, Mulan. May the worst film win. Lose. Well, you know.
In this episode...
Are you supposed to go first this time, or is it my turn to go first this time?
Look, right, okay, so I'll try and help out here. We are the 80s kids.
That's not the name anymore. Change the name, scrub the name, we're going to be right there.
One of us looks like a pirate, another one finds this a bit of a chore.
I don't even want to talk about it. That's how depressing I find the whole thing.
We're all on holiday. Like, everyone's left the office and I'm here kicking people and doing spy crap.
Sound like an asshole to work with.
So's Daniel Craig, by all accounts. Bah, 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 bah.
I kind of agree with you here.
There's no reality here. People do stuff that is just, no, it's just nuts. It's just stupid.
A lot of this stuff is like, oh, catch it on Netflix.
Like, there's a contract somewhere that has a clause about parallel universes in it. So, that's cool.
Everything else, yeah.
You know, we've got a posh British woman who's doing all the archaeology talk, so come along.
There's negative PR buzz, so I think that just turns people off.
And it gets weirder than that later on, trust me. So, okay, onward.
I want to abdicate.
Make sure you hit that subscribe button and smash the bell for notifications.
Don't see it, don't spend money, don't talk about it.
So there we go, that's what we are. Ian, your thoughts?
It doesn't seem to faze me at all. I mean, again, it's hard to say because I'm a cynical adult now as opposed to a child full of innocence and joy and excitement.
I just never associated you with We Hate Money.
Well, there's a lot of 80s nostalgia around. We have a whole podcast about it, I believe.
What other thing do I have? I'm not going to be a rocket scientist or anything. I've got this. This is how I'm going to make money. How dare you tell me I can't do it?
You know, at least not stamping on a man's junk this time in some sort of female empowerment buzz of blancmange.
No. Why the hell would I watch that?
Oh my goodness. This could go for 7 sequels, Leo.
Oh! Damn those kids and their wokeness.
You obviously have little regard for womanhood. You must learn respect.
Leo, we have a problem. Once again, the slurry pipes have opened from the studio and spilled forth onto the landscapes, this morass of junk for us to wade through and curate, and so we must climb to a great summit and survey the horizon and try and see how the poor viewing audience is going to navigate its way through this morass. Let's get out our lists and make our picks.
It is indeed us, the 80s kids. One of us looks like a pirate, another one finds this a bit of a chore. So I'll leave you to decide which of those we are as we continue.
I have to say, I think the hook hand is very fetching, Leo.
But I have this year, we are the 80s kids and we predict the future. That has been our thing. And it's kind of like, you know, is the pressure growing? Well, I have to say this year is going to be a tough year.
because one of the things that makes us able to see the future in such prophetic detail is the fact that at least three Marvel movies are going to drop over the summer, and that's kind of like a big sort of kitchen towel or sponge for audience money. So, you know, we've got some easy stuff right there. This year, not so much. In addition to which, you may have heard, if you're into these things, Disney went to the supermarket and picked up a 20th Century Fox Studios, and they've decided this year to do a thing, and that thing is to look at what Fox had already up and ready to compete, and to take out some of the more interesting titles that stood a chance against things that other people were releasing. And then they're just tossing them out there, not expecting them to make any money, but just kind of hoping to sap some like profits from other people, because that's what a gentleman does in a contest, isn't it? You put all your stuff in the place where it's most likely to make the most money, and then all the stuff you got in the cupboard, you just toss that out as bait. So that's going to make things interesting. To which end? This year, in my research, in addition to putting down what's coming out and when it's coming out, I've also totaled up the total amount of money that's probably been spaffed on each individual item. This will help us predict maybe what they're expecting it to do in the marketplace, and also therefore totaled up how much money they've spaffed on a genre, telling us exactly where they're thinking that genre is going to land this summer. And some of the results, not all of them, but some of them are kind of surprising. So we're expecting to see just about $500 million spaffed up the wall on comic book titles this summer. That's quite low, but that's because, as I said, Marvel have got two titles, one of which isn't coming out in the summer. So we've commenced already last week across the world. We were introduced to the Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
That's not the name Warner's. Anymore. That's not the name anymore. Change the name. Scrub the name. They've changed the name to...
Is that not the name?
They've changed the name to Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. After it came out.
Oh, right. Okay. After it came out, jeepers. Wow, okay, so there we go. Well, whatever it's called, they're trying to do a very difficult maneuver there. They're trying to do what I like to call a reverse woke. when it had its original title, people were all like, they won't call it Harley Quinn because they don't believe a woman can lead an action movie, despite the fact they're the ones that made Wonder Woman. And someone at Warner's went, oh, damn those kids and their wokeness. So they've changed it now to Harley Quinn. Yeah. Harley Quinn, it was always a title, really. I mean, we always preferred that, really. I mean, we don't even know why. Oh, the reason why it was called the original thing, and I think this, I mean, because, you know, Margot Robbie is a producer of this movie, that I've seen a couple of small posters which have Bop HQ as the title, Birds of Prey. HQ Harley Quinn. So obviously if Harley Quinn goes first, then that doesn't really work. So they probably sort of tried to do that for the t-shirts, and then it didn't work. So they decided they'd rather have their woke points instead.
Well, anyway, there's a lot, the woke controversy is very much buzzing around this film, but I think the name change was just a reflection of that it was just tanking really bad at the cinema. So they were like, well, it wasn't clear enough. This is a Harley Quinn movie. That seems to be.
I mean, it's really interesting that the two movies that have come out with the early year big guns, which have traditionally been the ones that pull the reverse, like we've had Deadpool, we've had Black Panther, Captain Marvel. None too shabby. Now they've got Dr. Doolittle starring Iron Man himself and Birds, and more on which later, and Birds of Prey, and both of them Titanic. And I don't mean the film Titanic, I mean the ship Titanic. So yeah, 97.1 million spent on that. I'm sure that's money well spent. Moving on. I'm sure another film that was money well spent is The New Mutants, which is a former Fox title. So Disney are throwing that out to the wolves. And often we don't know the budgets of things that are coming out. We're recording this the day after Valentine's Day, and or if you're Ian, 2 days after Valentine's Day. We don't really know. Until a movie's out, they don't tend to put the budgets up, and Disney are a bit cagey about it anyway. So I've had to do some projections. Now, I've projected that Fox will have spent $100 million on that based on, I don't think it was as expensive as X-Men First Class, and X-Men First Class was a shade more than that. So I've brought it in under that. So I think they've spent $100 million on this that's coming out on in April. I mean, I don't know. So there it is. Following April, we have May, of course, and also we have Disney's entree into the year. This is the beginning of Phase 4 with Black Widow, a back-looking prequel movie which they really should have made a long time ago, but are making now. Okay, thanks, that's fine. I've given that a projected budget of $150 million based on that's how much Ant-Man cost, and it's got to cost at least as much as Ant-Man, right? And following May is June and Wonder Woman 1984, which obviously is weirdly the high, you know, this is the high profile summer superhero release. Not weirdly at all. Wonder Woman was fine, but it's Warner Brothers now. They've got the chance to grasp the brass ring. They're probably putting it all on the line. And oh, wait a second. No, they've probably spent about $150 million on it because that's based on the budget of the first one. And maybe it's more, but we don't know for certain what the budget is. So I've guessed it's about that. So, because it's June, it's a long way away. So those are the four comic book movies that we have coming out this summer. Ian, which one's going to make the most bank?
It's a strange parallel universe we seem to be living in, where the comic book movies are kind of a poor showing. I mean, we're used to having this like long list. Tentpoles were fairly obvious. I'm going to say it's Black Widow, pretty much. It's the one I'm most excited about. Now, I hate talking about what I call the blancmange, which is the culture war that's going on. And it's just, I don't even want to talk about it. That's how depressing I find the whole thing. I have an opinion. I think I kind of have a side. But I just, I want to abdicate. If I fail a film is radioactive, I'll just walk away from it. Don't see it. Don't spend money. Don't talk about it. I don't think there's too much of that here. New Mutants just looks like a good old YA horror film. I think it would probably do all right if Disney put any real marketing behind it whatsoever, but I think it'll just be pushed out the door with a little bit of a shrug. Wonder Woman 1984, everyone loved Wonder Woman. I don't know how much they're going to love Wonder Woman 84. There was a huge plot leak that came out, or was allegedly leaked out there on the interwebs, and everyone thought the actual write-up of that spot, the plot line, sounded a bit meh. But Black Widow, there's a lot of reputation behind that name. Yes, this film is too goddamn late. I mean, the character's dead. Spoilers, everybody. So we're getting this prequel movie, and there's been some distant rumblings that it's a little bit woke because it's going to be tackling, you know, toxic masculinity or something like that. But these days, frankly, this is just a kind of a marketing tick box, as far as I can see, that they'll just throw that in there to get some retweets or something. I have no idea. But just overall, just in kind of like, you know, the quality we can expect from Scarlett Johansson and Black Widow, I think that's just going to be where I put my pin.
I was really thinking maybe I should make it a fight and go for Wonder Woman 1984, but Shazam, which I recently saw and really enjoyed, I don't think audiences have quite caught up to goofy DC movies yet enough. They haven't caught up enough to make them a competitor in the long term. But then the thing about it is, right, we've seen the box office for Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Captain America, Thor. I mean, they didn't even make the top 10 in 2010. It was only when the Avengers came out that that was the thing. Now, DC have already had a bad try at this, but I think that once you've done Shazam, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and I've done all of these things, and then, like I said, this is the tone we're going for, and then do Weirdo Justice League or whatever it is they're going to do, or Crisis on DC Earths or whatever it is, that's going to be fine as well. That's going to be where they're going to have the chance to crack finally that cinematic universe nut. And I don't think so. I don't think Wonder Woman 1984 is really going to beat Black Widow, even though Black Widow's kind of like a backward looking sort of ruminative wonder what they're going to do next kind of thing. And then they're going to follow that up with another really weird cosmic movie. Wow, they're really looking at that stream streaming service this year, aren't they? Not really looking at the cinema at all. But hey, that's fine. They've earned a holiday over at MCU, so that's fine. I don't know how I'd feel if I was Scarlett Johansson about my movie's the one that opens the section where we're all on holiday. Like, everyone's left the office and I'm here going kicking people and doing spy crap while everyone's like Kevin Feige's like phoning in, go, is everything okay? How's the movie doing? It's like, yeah, it's great. Thanks for your support. But hey, whatever. I still think it's going to kick everyone else's ass. And to be honest, Harley Quinn and the New Mutants are not putting any kind of a fight in that race. So yeah, we should probably move on. Sci-fi fantasy. As far as I can work out, Hollywood have decided to put a measly $725 million, so over half a billion. But it's not a great amount of money, as you shall see. It's like there's the lowest amount of budget, which is going to surprise no one. But apart from that, this is like the third lowest amount of money. Actually, it's not. There is actually a surprise small amount of money being dropped this year, or it might surprise some people. Like, things that you'd think they didn't spend much money on and expect to make a lot of money on, there, as you expect. But of all the big hitters, sci-fi fantasy, it's not looking too healthy in the back, especially bearing in mind the fact that we're talking about February has brought us Alien in Water Wings, or Underwater as it's otherwise known, which just came out just now, and benefits largely from having both TJ Miller and Kirsten Stewart in it. How can it possibly sink to the bottom of the Mariana Trench? Oh, wait. So then we have a long gap then, where as far as I can work out, there is no science fiction fantasy content for many months other than comic book movies. And then in July, we get Free Guy, Ghostbusters Afterlife, Tenet, Morbius, which is technically a comic book movie. I should move that up into the comic book movies. I'm so silly.
Yeah, it's still not going to win.
Do you think Morbius is going to make more money than Black Widows? It's still not going to win. Not going to win either category. So it's a bit of a thing. We'll just talk about that first, and then I'll move it up into comic book movies, because that's where it should really be. Sorry, Tenet, Morbius, Jungle Cruise, and then in August, we get Infinite. So we get quite a lot of science fiction fantasy for $725 million, but the budgets, you shall see, are a little bit less than they were in comic book. Underwater, we know the budget was $80 million. Sunk costs, as you might call it. Free Guy probably cost in the region of $70 million, because we have Ryan Reynolds, we have a sci-fi fantasy picture. Deadpool was more recognizable, but he's now Deadpool, so he gets a bit of cash in for that. So it's about the same budget as the original Deadpool, sort of in the same region. Ghostbusters Afterlife, probably about $80 million, which is based on the budget for the original Ghostbusters, the budget for the remake. It's kind of in that. That's how much I think that you could probably get away with paying for that sequel and expect it to make money. Tenet, bit of an outlier here. It really inflated the cost of the SF fantasy budget. We know what the budget for Tenet is. It's $205 million. So they're expecting Nolan to deliver based on that. Morbius, I've put a budget of $80 million, because that's about the same as Venom. So they're the same kind of project. So that, you know, it's in the same region. And then we've got Disney putting $140 million into yet another movie based on a ride, in this case the Jungle Cruise, and I've based that figure on the amount they spent on the first Pirates movie. I think, you know, it's got to be in the same ballpark as that. It certainly looks like it's got in the same ballpark as Pirates 1. So let's just quickly talk about Morbius, because obviously that should have been in comic books. You digging Morbius?
Not in the slightest. Is it just me? I've never quite seen the appeal of Jared Leto. I haven't seen a lot of his filmography, to be fair. But he was definitely the worst thing about Blade Runner 2040, what it was called.
I was pretty good. So that's not still not a low bar. I mean, to be the worst thing about a really, really good movie, you're still pretty good. You didn't ruin it.
He was definitely the worst thing about it. I mean, he was so, like, obviously a deranged maniac. He didn't write the lines. Although then again, maybe he did because he improvises.
Did you see the short? Did you see the short that he was in as well?
What is the appeal of Jared Leto, Leo? Sell this actor to me, because, you know, I know the Joker story. You sound like an asshole to work with.
No, that's Joaquin Phoenix. You're mixing him up with Joaquin.
No, Jared Leto.
Oh, you mean the Joker in Suicide Squad? Yes. I don't know. I'm coming at it from entirely the opposite direction, which is that it's like, it's part of their weird Spider-Verse thing that they're doing at the moment, Sony, that is. And I'm intrigued, which is good, because intrigued is good. Intrigued is better than anything I felt about either of the Amazing Spider-Man movies. It's better than what I felt about Venom, which was... Morbius is like, they've got their wind in them now. They've managed to strong-arm Disney into mixing up Marvel Universe with Sony Universe, albeit with this really weird contract that must have clauses like, yes, Tom Holland's Spider-Man can appear in the Sony Spider-Verse, but only on the strict understanding that this is a parallel universe and nothing to do. Like, there's a contract somewhere that has a clause about parallel universes in it. So that's cool.
I just watched the trailer, and didn't the Vulture turn up at the end?
Yes, they're making it all, yeah, it's all like, ooh, you know, like they really want to. I mean, and they're making Into the Spider-Verse 2. Like, the animated film is getting an animated sequel. So, you know, I think it's fine. But, yeah, it's not going to win in either category. It's not going to win in SF Fantasy. And so I think it'll make money. I think people are happy. The thing is, critics weren't. Hardcore fans were fine, I suppose. But people generally quite liked Venom. And they're looking forward to Venom 2. It's in a thing. I mean, again, people are now starting to get their franchise crap together way after Marvel ruined with the franchise interconnected movie thing. We just kind of did a whole thing with we're taking a year off.
Yeah, but, you know, famously, Marvel's the only really consistent cinematic universe. That's
yeah, fine. Yeah.
Everyone tried to go. So that's fine.
Yeah,
quickly glaze over the other things. Underwater, as soon as I saw it started with a submersible going deep down into the depths of the Odia. And there's some sort of curse about films set in water. They've always had a reputation for flops for as long as I can, or underperforming for as long as I can remember. I mean, when Titanic in the 90s, the rumours coming out about that film, about how high the budget was, I'm all like, oh, has there ever been a really successful Titanic film other than A Night to Remember? And we saw the trailers and it was people running around shooting guns on a sinking boat. I think, oh dear, this is going to flop very hard. And it became a huge movie and everyone was surprised. Films about water don't do well, generally speaking. What is it these days about in films that, you know, the youth, the young, they've always got to be portrayed like they've got some kind of live streaming audience watching them, which they have to perform towards. And so they've got to have this showy off, elevated personality. It's really annoying.
If you want to see me kill some more tentacled monsters and then go through my beauty tips, make sure you hit that subscribe button and smash the bell for notifications. You know, okay, cool. This week's vlog from the bottom of the Mariana Trench has been brought to you by Papa Miskatonic's Calamari Rings.
You could have an improv. That's what I like about you. But this film, however, it just feels like we've kind of seen this before. I don't know. It's not really exceptional. Free Guy, that sounds like a really charming concept. What I can glean from the trailer is a character in a video game who kind of realizes he's a character in a video game and begins to participate in the affairs. That seems like a jolly good thing to watch. Ghostbusters Afterlife. I don't know too much about this film other than the early trailers that we've seen. It's a film that I'm almost certainly going to go see because, hey, it's Ghostbusters. It's a name to conjure with. As a general audience thing, I don't know how well it's going to do. I don't think it's going to flop. The real question about this film is it going to outperform Ghostbusters 2016? I think that it will. I'm going to put my peg in that. I don't think it's going to be some kind of runaway juggernaut success. I think it's going to be a relatively successful ghost comedy action film. That said, I didn't see too much comedy from the trailer. It seemed far too much reverence for the past going on there. Tenet, yes, it's Christopher Nolan. Some sort of time travel palindrome thing going on here. We always know his films are interesting and worth your time. The trailer was really intriguing. I wanted to see more. That said, that's a really fat ass that budget has. This is really spending, and there isn't even a Batman in this. So I don't know how well that's going to do relative to his budget, but it's going to do all right, I think. I mean, I want to go see it. It's Christopher Nolan. Jungle Cruise, this is almost a family movie, Leo. What's this doing here? But the trailer itself made it look like just bonkers fun.
The thing is, family's quite packed anyway, and I think he's probably going to track that 12A rating, which means that if you throw it in with that bunch, it is not going to win family, because a cartoon will win family. So I've gone, okay, it's got The Rock in it, it's got Emily Blunt in it, it's got SF fantasy content in it, I'm going SF. I mean, it could be a comedy, that's the other thing it could be, but it's not. I'm going to go for straight family fantasy, but not a family picture in that way that you mean.
This is a Disney movie. It's a Disney family movie. You know, you can. That's going to be a good time. You can go take your kids to it. So I have a lot of confidence in this particular entry. Some of these films, you can't always take kids to them. Then we're on to Infinite, which I can find almost no information about whatsoever. And
no.
Monster Hunter, Screen Gems, I couldn't
find. Oh, sorry, I'd forgot. Yes, it's coming out in September, yeah. Okay,
I can find nothing about that whatsoever. I kept finding trailers for a video game of the same name.
That's because it's based on the video game of the same name.
Yes.
So the only thing we know about Infinite is it's directed by the guy who directed those two, Denzel Equalizer. Well, all right then. So that's fine. Bearing in mind the fact that it's like some kind of sci-fi-ish thing directed by that director who's never pulled a budget bigger than those Equalizer movies, it has to have the same budget, which is a perfectly reasonable budget for a sci-fi movie. But yeah, what it's about, we don't know. And the thing is, sci-fi is a tough sell. I think it's probably safe to ignore it. I'm just saying it's there. So, you know. And Monster Hunter, it's our old friends, Paul W.S. Anderson and Mila Jovovich, doing another video game franchise. Woo!
Oh my goodness.
60 that's
this
got
could go for
budget.
Seven sequels, Leo.
Yeah, $60 million is the actual budget for that. Apparently, it's pretty much in the can now. They're flipping it out at the end of the summer, which indicates a lack of confidence. And hey, if you're going to have a lack of confidence in anyone, it's Paul W.S. Anderson. And if Mila Jovovich is in her husband's picture and it doesn't have Resident Evil in the name, then you can just forget it altogether. So, you know, it's there. But yeah, I even forgot to read it out when I was doing the summary at the beginning. But I'll go first this time because you went first on the comic book movies. I think that the thing that will make most money out of this is going to be Jungle Cruise. And I'm going to say that I'm going to go for Jungle Cruise on the basis that, you know, The Rock has done those Jumanji movies recently and they were a thing. And it just looks like it's going to be a fun movie. I think people are going to. It is in a hotbed of competition versus Free Guy and Ghostbusters. In fact, it's in a stand-up fight with Ghostbusters. Audiences remember Ghostbusters 2016. Some people found it funny, other people didn't find it funny, and then there's a third party that we're not going to discuss with regards to that 2016 movie. But my feeling is, you know, the original Ghostbusters wasn't a massive hit. It made money enough for a sequel, but, you know, I think the people who like Ghostbusters are a very defined fan base. So I think Jungle Cruise is got the goods to just get people in, really. That's what I think. Ian?
I kind of agree with you here. It's just that I watched the Jungle Cruise trailer and the whole thing was just likeable. The Rock is likeable. The tone was likeable and fun. It seemed like I'd have a bit of a smile on my face during this film. That's kind of what I'm leaning towards as well. I mean, I look at Tenet, and basically the main thing on that's a selling point is Christopher Nolan. It's not particularly a star vehicle for anyone, as far as I can see. It's a big budget, so it's going to get promoted to hell. But it's not going to be Christopher Nolan's most successful film ever. It's just going to be another interesting thing in his portfolio. Ghostbusters Afterlife, I agree. It's like Ghostbusters has a good, dedicated fan base. And I think they're so happy to kind of be back in the prime timeline, so to speak, that this is going to cause a lot of attention. But I think Jungle Cruise could easily clip it, because kids will want to go to Jungle Cruise, whereas kids will be taken by their parents to see Ghostbusters Afterlife.
The other thing is you've got a middle sandwich part to Jungle Cruise, which is that trailer is winking at you like, hey, remember how much fun you had with that one mummy movie that had Brendan Fraser in it? Well, Brendan Fraser, we don't really talk to him anymore, but you know, we've got a posh British woman who's doing all the archaeology talk, so come along.
The only thing that might be that is that Jumanji Lost the Jungle, the second one with them, that underperformed to their expectations. It wasn't the big juggernaut that the first one was. So there, but then again, it's The Rock. Who doesn't like The Rock? Free Guy, look, it's the Deadpool guy. It's not everyone's taste.
I'm imagining it will come out too adult to really make the impact. It's basically like a cross between Deadpool and the Lego movie. So it's going to do fine, but I think it's definitely a midfield performer. Having said that, I may have something else to say about it later, or I may not, depending on him.
I wish I could just go Ghostbusters Afterlife so we could have some contrast between us and we pick different things. But it's like, no, it's going to do okay. It's not going to flop, but it's not going to be Disney Jungle Cruise money.
We could be totally wrong. I mean, this is a weird summer after all. We're just going to have to roll with it if we are wrong. But this is really weird because year upon year on this show, we've come to this category, action stroke thriller, and looked at those big action tent poles, and they're usually sticking out a mile away. There's three or four, there's like a couple of big ones, maybe a couple of little ones, and they really, you know, where we would say are the days of Die Hard and Speed and all of that kind of stuff. Well, they're back, apparently this year they're back, and the reason they're back this year is because probably Marvel are out and the studio. Well, there are some other things coming in. Right, first of all, in April, we get to see No Time to Die. So there's Jimmy Bond in a movie that cost $250 million, and that's a real budget. Oh my gosh. I've probably got some things about it, but let's move on. We've also got, also from the same studio, and also in April, so this shows how confident they are in this one. Is this even, what is this, counter-programming? I don't know. We have A Promising Young Woman. So both of these are distributed by Universal. So I think they've almost set this up to fail. Although, to be fair, it's an action movie, and the only thing that I could really identify about this was that it stars Carey Mulligan, who starred a few things. The closest thing she's been in is Never Let Me Go from 2010. That was a duo sci-fi drama with a $10 million budget. So I'm guessing that this action movie only cost about $30 million, because there's really nothing else to say, hey, you know, you should go see this. So I don't know what they're trying to do, annihilating it next to James Bond. I mean, people are going to go and see one action movie in April. Well, it's not going to, it's not promising for The Promising Young Woman, let's face facts. But there we go. After a bit of a throwback, sadistic, hardcore sci-fi, spy action in April, we get in May a nice dose of Uncle Tom, not the black kind of Uncle Tom, we're talking about Tom Hanks here, in Greyhound. So that's looking cool-ish, I suppose. And then we have Fast and Furious 9, so Sony going against Universal there. Woman in the Window, which we have talked about before, because this is a bouncer formerly from Fox. And this is where we see the Disney's sapping strategy in full flight. They don't want probably Greyhound to make as much money as possibly it could. So they just throwing out like this thing from the Fox vaults to try and attract the audience away. But I think Tom Hanks is pretty bulletproof, but that's me commenting, so let's keep going. And then we have a little bit of a break in June, which I thought was going to be something to do with Olympic sports, but apparently it's to do with nothing. Really, not very much is happening in June in the cinema whatsoever for absolutely no reason. Go figure. But in July, we get Top Gun Maverick from Paramount. That'll be fun for somebody, I'm sure. And then in August, there's a film called Nobody, which is kind of an unusual action movie to get made in this day and age, more on which later. And then in September. Now, in a way, you could say that this should be in comic book movies, but I don't. Well, first of all, it wouldn't win in comic book movies. And second of all, I think it's established itself away from. It's not really what people would think of as a comic book movie. So I've put it down here. And that is the new prequel to the two slightly iffy, but, you know, mostly enjoyable Kingsman. So this is The Kingsman. But that's from Fox, and it's Disney throwing it out. So presumably they're trying to screw someone over with this release, but who knows? But that's our slate, which is quite big for action thrillers. I've already realised I've talked more for action thrillers. I mean, I didn't do the total at the beginning. 882.3 million is round about the figure that Hollywood has spent one way or another on action thrillers this summer. Is this good news or is it just weird?
Once again, I seem to be, we can't talk about anything without the blancmange wobbling interview. Part of the reason I don't want to talk about this is because I just know it will inevitably lead to arguments with friends. So I just, this is one thing I just want to stay out of it. But I will just make an observation. I think there is a growing feeling amongst the general viewing public getting a bit fed up with woke advertising and selling points of tick box, retweet this, take that, incels. Just an observation, I think the general viewing public are starting to turn against this line of pitching movie to them. No Time to Die has a lot of buzz around this as a result, which I think is going to impact it negatively. I think Daniel Craig is time. He should have left. This last Bond film should have been his last. And this Bond film should have been about some new guy coming in. I'm feeling very underenthused to see another Daniel Craig Bond film. And this one seems like it seems terribly overbaked.
So's Daniel Craig, by all accounts. Bah, bah, yes. Bah, bah.
Yeah, so I think most of this budget probably went on paying him. So I don't think this is going to be one of the least successful Bond films that's ever come out. There was genuine negative PR. There's negative PR buzz. So I think that just turns people off. They don't want to face the blancmange.
Although Promising, people quite like the theme tune, apparently.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Bond theme tunes generally do quite well.
Daniel Craig's had some ones where people have been like, what even is this?
Oh, yeah, quarter of the noises coming at you. Yeah.
Funny you should say all of that, because I was saying if we were going to, it's highly debatable what we're going to do for the rest of the year in terms of season stuff, because we've got some other fish to fry, more on which in a metisode to come soon after this. But if we were doing a season of 80s kid stuff, James Bond is Screwed seems to be like a good title for one of our shows in that season. And really, one of the reasons why it doesn't seem like it's worth doing that show is because we don't even have to explain the title. I'm wondering if this might be the last James Bond movie. Whether it's going to be like, oh yeah, no, we're totally going to make a new one with a new Bond. And then they're just not. It's like, whatever happened to that? We didn't get around of it. Here we are, 2030. Ooh. Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a possibility. Sorry, carry on with your analysis of the rest of it.
Yes, A Promising Young Woman, I watched the trailer and I was kind of gleaning what the story was from this thing about a past rape accusation, which maybe not be true, and someone seeking revenge for that. And it's like, oh, what a great premise for a film. I'm so excited to go see this. Greyhound, I can't find very much about it other than it's a World War II movie starring Tom Hanks. Fast and Furious 9. That's going to do all right, isn't it?
Probably got the same budget as the James Bond, just based off...
Oh, it's going to outperform James Bond. It's a film that likes you.
Yes.
A Woman in the Window, that's basically some kind of... It's an agoraphobic Rear Window remake, as far as I can see.
I mean, I don't know whether you think of my theory that they're literally trying to screw over Tom Hanks with that, but that's what I think.
If I had to choose between the two, I'd go watch Greyhound first, you know, if I absolutely had to go see it.
They're hoping that enough people will do... Yeah, it's totally a vote-splitting movie. They don't think it's going to do bank at all. They just want the Greyhound to do less bank, that's all.
Maverick, Top Gun. And this is interesting. I actually have time for Tom Cruise. I always give him my attention. Now, once again, Tom Cruise is playing the man who is the best thing at doing whatever he's doing, which in this case is flying jets, in the unasked for and long overdue sequel to the 1986 Top Gun movie. Well, there's a lot of 80s nostalgia around. We have a whole podcast about it, I believe. So I'm looking at this and I want to like it. At the same time, I'm just kind of like, I don't know, I feel so disconnected from it. Also, I'm very ambivalent about it. We know Tom Cruise can flop even with a name to conjure with like Top Gun. I don't know, was it of its time? Are these things best to have learned? I don't feel that's safe to bet on whatsoever. Yeah, that's not going to win anything, is it? I mean, it's got a $20 million budget, which is appropriate, I think, for what it's probably going to make back. Kingsman, I think this is a franchise with in a diminishing returns spiral. I don't know if they can pull back off the last one, so I don't have much faith in that. So looking over this, it's going to be Fast and Furious 9. I feel that's almost a safe bet. That's the only one I feel is like you can put your money on that and you'll get something back from it. Everything else... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird that there's such a big slate. And it's, I mean, we have got the thing, which is there's two absolutely massive tentpoles, one kind of sort of absolutely massive tentpole, and a bunch of other stuff. So, yeah, I mean, the thing about it is, I watched a YouTuber that I like who does a show called The Cosmonaut Variety Hour. And it was called How You Get to Like, you know, I watched all the Fast Furious movies and I, you know, like, now I like them and this is how I'm going to teach you to like them too. His view is like when the original Fast and Furious came out in 2000, he was like 10, which should make us feel old because I was older than that, like nearly 30. And he, in his school, he liked Star Wars and anime. This was a movie about jocks and cars. No, why the hell would I watch that? But he said, then, you know, eventually people say, oh, no, you've got to watch them. You've got to watch them. They get really good. And then he breaks down. And the thing is that I had a real problem with the franchise. I actually quite liked the first three ones because I thought they were sort of cheap and cheerful. And I just kind of did what they did. And I thought that was fine. And then when four came out, I was like, really? Okay, fine. And then five came out. And I'm like, oh, you're still on this. And then by six, they'd kind of almost got their mojo back, in my opinion. But when you look at the cosmonaut's view on it, he's like, well, the first three movies are like cars and butts and cars and more butts, and that's fine. But then when they take the change, he says, really, by the time you finish, they are, and then he referred to a type of anime, and that's where it's all kids, like, I'm too old to really follow this up, but apparently there's a kind of anime in which you have a character who's like super strong, like all the main characters are like basically superhuman and can't be killed, and then everyone else is normal, and it's sort of about that, of the thought of being this epically superhuman like character and how they interact in the world. That's basically what Fast and Furious is now. There's no reality here. People do stuff that is just, no, it's just nuts, it's just stupid. So you have to look on it like it's an anime series. And like in the first three, like with a lot of anime, it hasn't really found its feet yet. It doesn't know what it wants to be. But then by the end, you're just into this whole thing. And I guess that's really what's happened. I mean, Fast and Furious has become anime. So, yeah, I think there's not much controversy here when we say, I mean, even Hobbs and Shaw made a decent showing at the box office. And that sort of had to put Fast and Furious at the end of the title, and wasn't really very Fast or Furious at all, but people still warmed to it. So I think this is going to be absolutely fine. And I kind of agree with your analysis of James Bond. So there we are. We've been simpatico 100% of the way so far. Things in our picks going to change when we come to comedy. Now, here's an interesting thing. And this does make sense in retrospect when I look at it. But comedy is one of the genres where Hollywood doesn't like to spend on comedies. Like, there's no point spending a bunch of money on something that's meant to make people laugh, so they don't. So the total budget for comedy this summer is coming in at a measly $110 million. Like, you could finance half a Fast and Furious picture on all of the money that all of the studios spent on comedies. But there's quite a lot in the category. So I put Bond Emma in here because they've made another remake of Jane Austen's Emma, which I think is, it's from Universal, and it cost about $7 million. It's really important that we go through these and numbers, because this is obviously one of the categories where we're going to look, we're probably going to see a battler coming out somewhere along here. So who knows what it might be, because that's what's really difficult. We've also got Greed from Michael Winterbottom with his other big star, Steve Coogan. Now, when you see Michael Winterbottom and Steve Coogan making a movie about a millionaire, and it's all like scandal and, you know, it's all names and, you know, he's done stuff before, you think, wow, this is going to be really big. But actually, as far as I can work out, the budget must have been in the region of $4 million, because that's how much Winterbottom seems to attract for a movie. Like, looking at his other stuff, that he doesn't get more than that. So that's what it must be. We've also got a movie called Like a Boss, and I'm taking it, Ian, because it's out now-ish, that you actually got to see the trailer for that in preparation for this show, for which I can only say I'm so sorry. But let's keep going on that. We also have Downhill, which is a former Fox property, which has almost certainly been tossed out to take money off Like a Boss, because Paramount really needed help making Like a Boss a flop. But Disney thought they'd just offer that helping hand anyway, which is that rarest of things, a Will Ferrell film in which Will Ferrell is not just gurning the whole way through. But he has actually done like three movies like that, and they tend to be at least dramatically interesting. So this is probably going to be a fine movie, but I think it's seriously been put there just to sap Like a Boss. Not that Like a Boss needed any help not to make money. Next month we have Misbehavior, which is a former Fox movie which Disney are throwing out. I don't even know why. It's got Keira Knightley in it. It's based on a true story. It's about Miss World. It's probably only cost about $5 million for Fox to make. It's probably like a former Fox Searchlight movie. I'm wondering whether Disney are just trying to sap up some money with that, because it looks like it might make some money and it doesn't have much competition in March. Then we have a long gap until June, at which point we get The King of Staten Island, which is from that mill of comedies that come out, you know, pregnancy one, Knocked Up, that's the one, This Is 40, all that stuff. I'm thinking that's quite an expensive one, because those comedies are well budgeted, but for a comedy, $35 million seems like a lot, and it's got no competition in the comedy field in June, so who knows, that might be okay. But I mean, I don't think it's going to be an okay movie, but I think it's probably going to do fine. People are probably going to see it, you know, for something to do, like they did with Knocked Up, The Breakup, and all of that stuff. So fine. July brings us, now this is one I almost missed because it doesn't have British distribution, but when I was looking for budgets or something, or actually when I was trying to confirm things on the Wikipedia page, it is getting a release in America at least. It hasn't got a date. It might come out in the UK as well, but it's Bob's Burgers the movie, which you can't ignore the fact that they're putting out a Bob's Burgers movie, even if it's not going to get a UK release. So that's definitely an interesting thing to be out there. Again, it's coming out with very little comedy competition in July, so who knows, might do fine. It might even sneak out in the UK. It might be the reverse of those things where we go, well, this is probably going to get bounced. It might get a late distribution deal over here in the UK and end up in some cinemas. That'd be cool. I'd certainly like to see it. I mean, I don't know whether I'd get to see it, but I would. And then in August, oh my gosh, Bill and Ted, it's time for them to face the music. Warner Brothers is betting big on this particular fantasy comedy, because the budget for Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey was $20 million. That was in, you know, 1993. So I cannot imagine that Face the Music cost less than that, even if Keanu Reeves is like, no, I'll do it for less money than I would usually take. That $20 million includes Keanu Reeves taking less money than he would usually take. And William Sadler's back as Death. So they're really banking on Bill and Ted. I mean, the thing is, I'm not sure the kids today really know who Bill and Ted are. I know who Bill and Ted are, but I'm not a kid. So who knows what that's going to do? But that's your comedy slate, Ian. I know it's a hard question, but what are you liking there?
What am I liking here? What are these films that I actually want to go see? Would I probably go and see Bill and Ted in cinema just because, you know, I am of that generation which Bill and Ted was a thing. You were in school, it was the last day, and so they stick on Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey and everyone just watched that. But you, Ted Wright, there's a whole generation who just don't know what this is, and Keanu Reeves is just famous for so many other things now. He's not using bullet time or being the chosen one in this film or being an international...
Yeah, he's being the chosen one, him and Ted. Him and Bill.
Oh, of course, they are chosen ones, aren't they? The excellent ones. Yeah. Of course, it's all about the fact that it hasn't come to pass. We haven't seen a trailer for it yet. There's a little bit of publicity. It'll all rank up as we get in there. I think some of your budgeting here has been rather conservative, but if it's anywhere near truth, I think these films are kind of priced about right. Emma's not going to make much money at all. And if it's just based on a $7 million budget, fair enough. Greed, I watched the trailer of that, and I thought it's Steve Coogan being a tiresome... awful person again. But then if the budget's only $4 million, it's like, well, it's probably about right. His Alpha Papa didn't storm home, did it? And that's his that's his most famous character. So I think this is going to make less than that. Like a Boss, yes, I did see the trailer. Oh, well, I'm not the target audience for it, Leo.
Apparently no one's the target audience for it.
You know, at least not stamping on a man's junk this time in some sort of female empowerment buzz of blancmange. So there's that. Downhill. Oh my God, I've forgotten about what this one is about already.
It's about the man who sees an avalanche coming and leaves his family at table.
Yes, of course. It's a Will Ferrell thing.
But it's not the Will Ferrell thing like, say, the Talladega Nights or Anchorman. It's like... the one where he's a depressive who sells all his stuff on the lawn, or the one where he's a fictional character and who's being told that he's going to die. It's that Will Ferrell, not the usual Will Ferrell. It should be pointed out. Oh. So all the comedy is arch. It depends on stuff like, I wasn't running away to leave my family to die because I saw an avalanche coming. He's that guy. He's definitely, he's got to be real or the joke doesn't work. And we know he can be. So it's an art movie in a way. So
okay, Misbehavior. Blancmange needle is flickering on this one, I'm sorry to say. And on my premise, people are a bit over the Blancmange-ness of things. Because it's all about raving. It's a pushback against sexism and racism. Of the past, which we're going to have to obsess over and pick over again. I think people are a bit exhausted by this topic. So that's out.
This is double woke, because not only is it a bunch of people protesting against Miss World, but the trailer makes it quite explicit that those women of color who are like,
oh yeah,
this is like my thing. Like, what other thing do I have? I'm not going to be a rocket scientist or anything. I've got this. This is how I'm going to make money. So how dare you tell me I can't do it? So you've got multiple levels of woke in one movie.
She was also pushing back against the fact that she was getting far less press attention than the other white contenders as well. So it's like, it's all racism, it's all sexist, and it's also of the past. So it's not exactly, but I think people are just over wokeness right now. So now, King of Staten Island. Oh my God, that's no one I've blanked on. Even though I looked at the trailer and you just talked to me about it, I've again gone blank.
It doesn't matter. It's the same people that bought you the 40-year-old virgin and This Is 40 and Knocked Up. It's the same. It's just like a sausage from the sausage factory.
Okay, fair enough.
One of those.
Bob's Burgers, the movie. People like Bob's Burgers. People watch it. I haven't watched Bob's Burgers, but people who have absolutely love it. So maybe this will be a thing. It's certainly not, hasn't very high budget, so it could easily just romp away as a battler. Bill and Ted Face the Music. It's personally the one I'm most interested in, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be as good as the ones in the past from my childhood. It's a bit of a mess. It's hard to determine. I mean, never really someone who goes to the cinema to have a good chuckle anyway. It's just not part of my DNA. So it's hard for me to put my head quite... Do you suppose to go first this time, or is it my turn to go first this time?
It's your turn to go first, I'm afraid.
Oh, God.
Wait a second. What have we done? No, it's my turn to go first. Look, right, okay, so I'll try and help out here. Bob's Burgers. I love Bob's Burgers. I've watched every episode I can... without actually paying to have digital copies of it, which is like, well, I won't pay to have digital copies of anything. So that doesn't really mean very much. However, I have to ask the question, do people want to go to the movies to watch a super long episode of Bob's Burgers, which is almost certainly what this is going to be? And I have to say, I'll wait for it to come on streaming. That's all I can say. I mean, yeah, it's fine. I'm sure I'll have a great time with it. But do I really want to go to the cinema to see it? Is there anything cinematic that's going to happen in Bob's Burgers, the movie? I'd love to say that there was, but there isn't. So it's just not going to happen. So we already know Like a Boss is dead. Emma and Greed are not. Emma, Greed and Downhill all art house comedies. So the only real comedy that is coming out, like in terms of the comedy thing, the only real sort of in that sort of thing where The Hangover made a bunch of money and Knocked Up made a bunch of money and all that, is this King of Staten Island movie. And people who go as and Wedding Crashers and all of these things, like, it's just, that's the only one that's there. Bill and Ted Face the Music is going to be great for certain people, but it's got cult sequel that makes some money and then nobody ever talks about it again all over it. So I'm actually going to have to say that the thing that's going to make the most money but not going to get in the top 10 is The King of Staten Island.
I think that's a pretty good theory you've got there. I mean, just looking over the list, like Emma, no. Greed, no. Boss, no. Downhill, no. Misdemeanor, no. King of Staten Island, it has form as a genre. Bob's Burgers, South Park movie would not work these days. And Bill and Ted, it's you made a very good argument to persuade me to go for King of Staten Island. But just for some contrast, and because I'm not particularly invested in comedy, so I don't mind being wrong in it, I will go Bill and Ted Face the Music.
I hope that you're right, actually, and I hope that I'm wrong. I'm certainly not going to see The King of Staten Island until it's like been on Netflix for like some. Maybe not even then. I mean, there's the one now, the one with that stoner guy, Seth Rogen, that's one. And Charlize Theron, who I generally like, about the presidential candidate. That's come on. I go, oh, yeah, I should watch that. You know, it's on my to-do list, but it's not anywhere near the top of my to-do list. So maybe I never will. So there we go. Right, this is, we better roll our sleeves up. This is the one, Family. Now, just to give you an idea of how big the family market is, right, I've estimated, and as you said, my estimates are, where I've estimated, my estimate is conservative, but it's based on, like, things that have happened in the past, and like, well, you know, surely the same thing will happen now that happened in the past, right? But even given that conservative nature of estimate, apparently Hollywood is banking $1.742 billion on family movies this summer. And one could argue that they have started out ignominiously on this path, for they spent a 10% of that enormous whopping bunch of money on Doolittle, which has come out in the UK this month and has already been out in the US. And so that we don't have to discuss it very much after this, it only made $95 million in the domestic box office, and now it's worldwide, and it's about Robert Downey Jr. pretending to be Welsh as Dr. Doolittle, you know. And up against that is the new Sonic movie, the one which was like, oh no, it's going to be terrible, and now it's like, oh, it might actually be okay. So that's out now. And Disney have decided that Harrison Ford in a boat with a CG dog is like the best thing ever. And they've spent $109 million on a Call of the Wild adaptation. Wow. March brings us Onward, which is interesting because when you look at that on the trailer, this is a very interesting category because people tend to kind of catch bits of family movies and they don't, you know, for people that don't know, right? Okay. Onward is about elves going on a road trip. It's a Pixar movie. The thing about that, you'd think, oh, well, maybe Pixar are trying to take it old school. They're just keeping it low key. Maybe the $175 million they must have spent on this, because that's how much they spent on Coco. And that's how much they spent on The Good Frickin' Dinosaur. So there's no way they haven't spent $175 million making a movie about elves on a road trip. And it gets weirder than that later on, trust me. So, okay, onward. Not that I think it's going to be bad, just it's not, oh, there's these emotions in a girl's head, or, oh, there's these cars and boys love cars, don't they? Or, oh, it's about monsters who are under your bed, or it's about literally about elves on a road trip. So, and then we have My Spy. Now, this is really weird because all of the names of distributors on the list are Disney, Universal, Sony Pictures. But I had to include this one because although it's distributed by the well-known distribution company STX International, no idea, because it's Dave Bautista, yes, Drax, he's making his The Pacifier, or like Action Nanny, or whatever that Hulk Hogan one was called, or, you know, that kind of movie in which he's the father figure to some girl in family hijinks. So obviously that's a thing, it's a contender. I've given that a budget of $24 million, as that's half the budget for Dwayne Johnson's Tooth Fairy movie, and that seems about fair at this stage. So it's in there, it's fighting, who knows. We have live action Mulan. Now Gong Li let slip that the budget for this is nearly $300 million. I mean, I don't think they're going to have difficulty taking that back, old Disney, but whatever. And we also have in March, this is all in March, we haven't even got to like the rest of the summer yet, we have Trolls World Tour from Universal, which is probably about the, well, no, it's a known figure, it's got a $125 million budget. And we also have Peter Rabbit 2, which has got a budget of $50 million. Why Trolls and Peter Rabbit? Well, Trolls, I can kind of see why that's fighting Pixar in this case. Mulan, yeah, I can kind of to see why, because not every parent's going to want to take their kid to see live action Mulan. But why Peter Rabbit has decided in a year where nothing is coming out in April, why Peter Rabbit 2 have decided that they want to go up against Trolls, they can only surely lose that battle. Well, there we go, that's what's happening. So the kids are going to be well served through Easter with all of that lot, which is probably just going to cob about for ages. And then in May we have Scoob, which I understand is a prequel to Scooby-Doo, like the origin of Scooby-Doo, and that's made by no one, a guy who's directed lots of straight to video Scooby-Doo crossovers, including things like Scooby-Doo and Kiss and stuff like that. So I've given that a budget of $75 million because it can't have had a bigger budget than the original Secret Life of Pets. It's right in there as that, so, you know, whatever. The Scoob is going up against the third SpongeBob movie, which I think is probably one to watch because it's the third SpongeBob movie. He's had two popular movies already, so he's on his third movie. So how can you argue with that? Disney are dropping, I believe this is a former Fox, actually. I might be wrong about that, but either way, there's an Artemis Fowl movie which has been about for absolute ages, and that's getting dropped in May. I mean, it's entirely conceivable they just want to drop that in the thought that some people will go to the cinema and have a nice time, and then when Jungle Cruise comes out, they think, oh, remember when we went to Artemis Fowl and we had a good time, let's go and see Jungle Cruise on the same basis. So it could be that that's just like an hors d'oeuvre for Jungle Cruise, and it's being treated as such. Soul is the second Pixar movie this summer coming out in June, which means that it must have a $175 million budget because The Good Dinosaur had a $175 million budget, despite the fact that this is a Pixar movie about an old jazz musician. Okay, look, Pixar are in a lore to themselves. So they think people are going to go and watch a movie about jazz that has no kids.
It's a bit of a Ratatouille, isn't it?
Yeah. And then in July, we're back on more familiar ground. And now we have Minions 2, The Rise of Gru. Now, you'd think they'd drop a bunch on this. I mean, $175 million is getting spaffed the previous month on the Jazz movie. But no, the budget of Despicable Me was $80 million. So we cannot believe that Minions 2 is going to have a higher budget than the third Despicable Me movie. So it must be in that region. So again, one to keep an eye on. And finally... in August, and this is weird, this is as weird as the Soul movie, Disney is going with The One and Only Ivan, which I don't even, it's got Angelina Jolie in it. I think there's like the Ivan is an elephant, maybe? I can't even remember. I watched the promotional material for it. I'm like, this is so odd. But Big Hero 6 had a budget of $165 million. So, and obviously, Soul from Pixar has 175, so hey, why not? We're spending money on weird stuff. I mean, to be fair, given the list that I've just read out, maybe kids, by the time they've seen all of the other things that are going to be out for them in the summer, will be like, hey, I'm really in the mood for something kind of experimental. What have you got for me? So there we go. That's what we have. Ian, your thoughts?
I almost want to put forward the proposal that we split Family into an animation subsection. Help sort through all this.
Maybe in future we could consider that. Live action Family, animated Family, yeah. And at least we didn't do that in the year The Lion King came out. You know, the live action. I'm doing the air quotes thing here. Yeah, okay, so.
Okay, well, Sonic is out. I don't know if it's going to top the list, but from what I'm hearing, it's with the public it's reviewing quite well, and it's taking quite well too in the offices, even if it's been out for like a week or so. There is a sort of adjunct to the Blancmange War going on here, which is our customers are scum phenomenon, which seems to be going on at the moment, and Sonic is got a certain flack from certain quarters because it really listened to its fans and made adjustments. And all our customers are scum. Why are you listening to what they say? That is not how we make a better world. And so there's part of me, a little deep, cynical, ugly part of myself, that actually wants to go out there and buy some tickets to a Sonic movie just to support them for doing the sort of changes. It's like it was good for them for listening to feedback and altering the film to everyone's positive reaction. I never played Sonic on the console. A film with a really, really bad CGI Sonic character in it, it would be something I would point and laugh at, but I wouldn't be deeply offended by it. So the fact that Sonic fans have got the Sonic Hedgehog that they kind of wanted, I'm happy for them, and I want to encourage the makers for doing this. But it's doing well. I don't know if it's going to storm over everything else we've got ahead of you, because there's an awful lot of Pixar in front of us. Call of the Wild. Oh my God, that's a very bad CGI dog. I saw the trailer for that the other week. It's awful, isn't it? No.
Just so very CG.
I don't know what's in Pixar's mind these days. They do just seem to be just two films in one year, and neither of them particularly... Oh, okay. Onwards, it doesn't seem to faze me at all. I mean, again, it's hard to say because I'm a cynical adult now as opposed to a child full of innocence and joy and excitement. But I don't... Even though these Pixar films have a very large budget... and will in some fashion claw back their money due to, you know, associated merchandising and inevitable good DVD and Blu-ray sales and international sales and everything else and ending up on Disney Plus at some point. It's like, oh, okay, with Elves on a Road Trip. Okay. Mulan, bit of a buzz. The first Mulan movie, everyone seemed to enjoy that one. I think this time around, because it's live action and it's current day, there's going to be a bit of like, a woman doing a man's thing? Oh, my God. I don't think that's going to do particularly well. Trolls on a Tour, Universal, no. Peter Rabbit 2, this is interesting actually, because Peter Rabbit 1, you put forward the theory that no one realized how annoying this film was until they went and saw it. So they went for Peter Rabbit and everyone came away annoyed. There was some grinding of teeth, the fact it did make money. And we put forward the theory that the test to see just how annoying Peter Rabbit was if Peter Rabbit 2 does especially badly. I mean, we need to put a little note there to check up later just how badly Peter Rabbit 2 did. Scoob, prequel, no one cares. SpongeBob movie, again, it's just like, I haven't watched SpongeBob movies. I was never really into the SpongeBob cartoon, but my nieces and nephews, they were just on glue. They could watch SpongeBob cartoons on a loop. Artemis Fowl, wasn't this kicked back from last year?
Yeah, that's why I think it's not. It didn't start with Disney. This isn't a Disney move. They'd have just buried it if they didn't want it out there or put it out on DVD without cinema release. So I think they inherited it, but I couldn't find any information that confirmed
that. It's a book series it's a fantasy book series that you can adapt that's a bit quirky and funny. I've done one of the novels because I used to do an audio book job once upon a time, so I've heard one of the novels. I saw the sequel to Artemis Fowl is the one that I did. I'm sure it has noise, but I don't think it's going to be great. I wouldn't put $125 million into it. My God. Soul, again, it feels like, is this some sort of passion project for someone who is working at Pixar? Because you always have to ask the question, who is this for? This is Ratatouille. It's about a French chef who has a rat who helps him cook. Really? Okay. Well, there's Timeless. Minions. You think this is a safe bet, but I'm wondering, has the Minions bubble pop simply for the fact that the main target audience for all the Minion films have all grown up?
I do have an inside track. Maybe you want a hand before you make your final pick, but yeah, that we'll stick with that for a minute, and then I'll tell you why you're wrong in a minute.
Well, but you've got a little man. A little man still loves Minions.
Yeah,
I think that's basically what.
Loves those Minions.
Oh God! In that case, I might as well just go Minions. It's the only thing you can just put on here that's a genuine tent peg. A lot of this stuff is like, oh, catch it on Netflix. You know?
Okay, fair enough. And you're not even going to comment on the one and only either.
No.
It's got Angelina Jolie in it. It's expensive.
Oh, yeah, it's because she sells movies.
No, Maleficent.
The second Maleficent didn't do too well.
No, the second one didn't. But the first one did well enough that there is a Maleficent 2 not to do so well, which is to the surprise of everyone. Actually, what are Disney playing at when they release Frozen 2 and Maleficent 2 almost next to each other? Okay, whatever. You do, Disney. Whatever you want. I just never associated you with We Hate Money. That's why I didn't really realize that was a thing anywhere in your organization. But apparently, right there. Things that I know. Sonic. I took the little man to see Paw Patrol because I'm trying to get him used to the cinema environment for when he's a little bit older and may be able to sit through something other than Paw Patrol at the cinema. And they had an advert for Sonic. Now, we have played for many hours two video games. One is Mario Kart 8 on the Switch because that's the new hotness, because the controller is small enough that he doesn't feel like he can't quite operate the controls, and that is good because it makes him participate and it's good. But before that, we had what brought the problem to my attention was we played Sonic All Teams Racing Transformed on the PlayStation, and he couldn't both steer the car and put down the accelerator, which, as I'm sure you can appreciate, would be a handicap in playing such a game. I mean, in addition, Mario Kart 8 literally kind of half drives the car for you at the lower CC ratings. So basically, one game is like, well, unless you've got some basic video game skill, even easy is going to be impossible for you. Whereas the other one is like, everybody come on in, let's play this together. That's why Nintendo makes the big bucks. But the fact is that Dylan knows and likes Sonic. For the tracing, he thinks he's a racing guy. He doesn't know anything about running along collecting rings, but he likes Sonic. Saw the advert, seen the advert three times to my knowledge. He's never gone, can I go and see that, Daddy? Secret Life of Pets 2, he didn't know anything about that. He tried watching Secret Life of Pets 1, didn't like it, but he really wanted to go to the cinema when he was like not even three to see Secret Life of Pets 2, which we didn't take him because we knew he'd just mess around and we'd end up spending money for nothing. But, you know, like, Sonic is not connecting with him. He hates Peter Rabbit. He hates Peter Rabbit in all Peter Rabbit's forms, so that's the way he is. Maybe that's just him. I don't know, but he doesn't like it. Trolls World Tour hasn't done a very good job of trying to sell itself to him. Like, he loves Trolls, but he hasn't. None of us know about Trolls World Tour. It's coming out literally next month. So, you know, that makes me worried for its future. SpongeBob he likes, but again, Sponge on the Run hasn't really captured his imagination. He knows nothing of Minions 2, The Rise of Gru, although now I'm saying it, as it comes out in July, he may be old enough to go and see that in the cinema. So, yeah, we're probably both going to go for Minions 2, having said that. So that's the answer. And in case you were really worried about this, he hasn't been like, oh, but Father, when is that the one and only Ivan movie coming out? He really hasn't said that, because, hey, why would he? Horrifically, we are coming to a crash. This is the last. We usually have horror and then we have like notable. The notable thing about this year is not a single weird trend. Nothing. I mean, apart from that family stuff where we've got animated features or partially animated features that are just, what are you even doing? It's like whoever made Rango is like, oh, we should have saved it for this year, apparently. So apart from that, that's notable that you've got weird family movies coming out this year. But in horror, there's quite a large showing. There's another large menu, but Hollywood is only, in contrast to family's $1.742 billion bill, the only thing that scores lower than horror is comedy, and horror needs special effects. So gosh, $146.5 million approximately spent on horror for this year. Which, bearing in mind the number of titles coming out this year, is quite low. So this month we have Brahms the Boy 2, which is like, there's a film called The Boy, and this is the sequel to that. So it's a bit like Rambo First Blood Part 2. Yeah, it's not a bit like the film. It's a bit like the titling convention. Yeah, so apparently The Boy 2 liked Brahms, or The Boy, like, it's a puppet doll picture, horror picture. For $10 million they made that, and they've spaffed it out already. And Color Out of Space from Studio Canal, I've heard about this. It's a Lovecraft horror with Nicolas Cage. What's not to love? Although it says at less than 25 locations on the release, there is a rumor that it might go wider if those less than 25 locations do okay. I really want to see this movie, because it's Nicolas Cage in an H.P. Lovecraft adaptation. How can I not want to see this movie? But am I going to get it before I get my Arrow Blu-ray of it? I don't know. And then this month also we have that Blumhouse Invisible Man movie, $9 million, or if it's his Blumhouse, one of these picture houses anyway. Invisible Man, $9 million from an estimate. That somebody estimated it would cost that much. Like, I didn't estimate. I got it from someone else's estimate. So there's Horror Invisible Man. Okay, that's a thing. March, we have Fantasy Island. Oh, no, sorry. Wait, it's Blumhouse's Fantasy Island, because I'm sure that will make all the difference. Now, yeah, I've put here, technically it might be cast as an FF fantasy thriller, but it is... I mean, they put Blumhouse's in the title. It's like Hammers, whatever, something with Dracula in it. You know, they're going for that horror audience. So it's going in horror. $7 million, it's Fantasy Island, but with a horror twist. For those that remember Fantasy Island from the, like, 60s, 70s, whatever. If you don't want to be on the Fantasy Island because it's too noisy, then you might want to find a quiet place. And if you've already found a quiet place, you might want to find a second one. Yes, A Quiet Place Part 2 is out in March with a budget of $21 million. Crazy. Okay, fine. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, whatever. We've got a weird horror coming out in April. I'm not weird in the cool, groovy, color out space way. No, this is Antlers, which was a Fox picture that Disney are shoving out of the gate for some reason. It's just a horror movie about some kind of something to do with deer, one has to assume, because it's called Antlers. Who knows? Then following that, hot on its heels in June, Jordan, right, when I first saw that Candyman was coming out in June, I was like, oh, there's some kind of anniversary of Candyman, they're releasing it in a few cinemas. And I was like, oh no, wait, they've completely, no, it's actually meant to be, I think, a sequel to that movie with Jordan Peele, who made Get Out and Us. I'm like, now Jordan Peele is producing this, he's not directing it, for which reason I've given it an estimated budget of $10 million, because he's not the director, and Jordan Peele, as the director of Us, got $20 million to make that thing. And so there's a Candyman re-sequel in June. Wow. July. There's a Purge movie coming out, and this is the thing about the Purge. I love this. This is absolutely adorable. I mean, Fast and the Furious very quickly was like Fast and Furious 8, but the Purge, the people who are making the Purge are like, we should have just done that. It should have been Purge, Purge 2, Purge 3, Purge 4, even though that was a prequel. Now Purge 5. That's what they're calling it, because we haven't thought of a title with a colon. Why do we even have to do this? So that's what we've got. We've got like Purge. It's a Purge movie. It's coming out. It's in July. You know, Purge. It's the Purge again. Okay. And then in August things get really horrific, because you've got the Empty Man, of which there is not much information, but it's another former Fox picture, probably $5 million. See Antlers for details. Escape Room 2. I haven't even seen Escape Room 1. Neither do I want to. Mostly because I don't even want to play escape rooms. I find the whole idea like, really, they lock you in a room with a crossword puzzle. That's supposed to be what people are entertained by these days. So as I don't like the real thing, why would I care about the horror thing? And I've already seen Cube. So what's the point? But apparently other people thought differently, so Escape Room 2. There's a film coming out from Warner Brothers called Malignant. Malignant, and literally all we know about it is it's called Malignant. Is it like Sinister? Well, Sinister kind of lurks in the corner and is evil, whereas this doesn't lurk but might be cancerous. So it's Malignant.
Yeah, I was thinking that. It's set in an oncology ward or something.
And then Paramount are going with Spell, which is a $5 million movie about black magic, I'm going to say, because it's called Spell. I mean, I've seen some, not even a trailer. It's just some weird stuff about, oh, yeah, there's a thing with a spell. I mean, this is part of the year where it's like, these titles are really not helping. I mean, I suppose, actually, the one and only Ivan doesn't really help, does it? But at least it's long and complicated, so it could be intriguing. It's not, but it could be. But a film called Malignant and another one called Spell? Who knows? I mean, this is one of the big problems is where this is going to be battlers, because if one of them turns out to be intriguing and people happen to be in the mood to go and see it, that's where we're going to see our battlers. So having no information is really unhelpful. And then in September, just so that you know they've spent some money somewhere on something, they're bringing The Conjuring 3, or not that they've put a 3 in it, they're trying to be classy here. So The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. So they try and be classy, and then they give that subtitle to the movie. So, hey, at least you tried. You know, A for effort. 3 for effort. That's it, Conjuring 3. So Conjuring 2 was $40 million to make. I can't really believe that they're going to spend more on The Conjuring 3. It's a horror movie. And all the others are like $5 million, 6.5, probably $9 million, probably in the region of $10 million. So, yeah, $40 million is quite a lot to spend on horror movies. So that's what I think they've spent. Yeah, so what's going to be the horror king of 2020? Ooh, this is really, really, really hard, because... which is why you've made me go first.
Yeah, well, also, we've got to bear in mind that whichever one we pick is going to be the best, is we're also kind of hedging our bet it's going to be The Battler as well.
Yeah, I mean, because, well, no, you've tipped me there. Right, I think the thing that's going to make the most money overall is going to be that Conjuring sequel, because that's why it exists. I hate it, you hate it, well, you don't like horror anyway, but as, like... lots of people hate The Conjuring because it's just so lazy. But look at Paranormal Activity. We're in that region there. That's going to make the most money for certain. What else can make that much money? But I think that's going to make the most money relative to his budget is The Battler, and that's not necessarily that. Well, it won't be The Conjuring. Devil Made Me Do It. So I think I'm going to go for The Conjuring sequel, because that is clearly and obviously the thing that has the potential to get those horror people into the cinema. Although many of the same horror fans will go and see some of the other stuff, but I don't think in such numbers.
Colour Out of Space. This has been, you say it's a limited release, but I've been getting adverts for this thing popping out of me left, right, and centre.
Yeah, but you're in Australia. I'm talking the UK.
Ah, right. Well, you know, there would be much of a muchness as far as international releases.
Yeah, you would think, wouldn't you? But apparently not.
So that's really bizarre. The strange thing is, I think Nicolas Cage, I think Cthulhu, I go, I am intrigued. And then you look at it and it's like full of magentas and it's very dazzling. And you don't normally associate H.P. Lovecraft with neon magenta. Certainly, if I had to pick one, that's probably the one I'd personally go see. But then I'm not a horror fan. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of find all these low-budget horror films kind of blow into one. I literally, before we did the podcast, looked at the trailers of these films. And then I sat with you and you talked about them all again. And already, they've kind of just collapsed back into this kind of... this kind of... Blah.
That's not so because you're not a horror fan, trust me. That's just because you've got eyes and ears.
Yes. Like Antlers, is that going to be a horror take on Santa Claus? I really hope it is. Candyman remake.
No one wants us. Come on, man. Krampus is great. Sorry.
Okay, is The Purge still giving a good punch at the box office? Is it still the name?
Of course it is. That's why there's a fifth one.
We've backed The Purge before, and have we ever won backing The Purges on this list?
That's the problem. It makes money. I've given it the same budget as the first Purge, which was the not the first Purge, but the fourth Purge, which is called... I'm crying. Just call them the Purge number, for God's sake, people. But yeah, that's what the budget of the last one was. So it's probably going to be about the same, because that's quite a lot of money to spend on a horror movie. So $13 million is probably going to make money. But I don't think it's going to make superb money. That's all.
Yeah, it'll make money, but it's, as I say, we've backed it before. I don't think we've ever won doing it. Now, in terms of name recognition, A Quiet Place made a big splash a few years ago.
Yes, it did.
I was one of those people that was irritated by the fact that it turns out the sound-sensitive creatures are vulnerable to high-pitched noises, which apparently no one tried until they accidentally stumbled across it several years after the apocalypse. Like, what? That's the first thing you would try. You would try it just to mask the sound of your own noise, wouldn't you? Anyway, here we are. It's a sequel. The survivors of the first film have to abandon their home and go on a bit of a trek. And wouldn't you know it, the real monsters are the humans themselves. Yeah, I feel that's not going to quite live up to the reputation of the first one.
Yeah, I didn't talk about it, but I was like, I thought that there, I mean, you know, You've nailed the chief stupid thing. There are many other stupid things about there, which nobody ever talks about. So I feel like I'm a crazy person, but there are loads of stupid things in A Quiet Place. And I can't help but feel that even if people haven't actually mentally accepted that A Quiet Place is not a good movie, in the back of their head, they know it isn't. And therefore, when a sequel comes, like, oh, for some reason, I'm just not attracted to this movie. It's like, yes, because the first one wasn't very good. And people said it was, but they were lying. And now there's a second one. So now you can't, inside yourself, search your feelings. You know it to be true. It's rubbish. So I don't think it's going to do well at all.
The sequel to The Boy, this has already hit cinemas because we're in February right now. This must be out.
Don't back that. It's just a dull movie.
Yeah, just a dull movie. Because I thought creepy doll movie. Oh, what the hell? All the other ones make money.
Yeah, creepy doll movie. It's a creepy doll movie.
Do they battle? No. oh God, I do feel a bit lost here.
You can either just go for The Conjuring like I have, which is like the boring choice. I'll pick for you. The only thing that even came into the thing of like, this is possibly going to make more money, is possibly the Candyman rejig. That might make a bunch of money. It might. But it is a bit of a gamble.
Well, the thing is, how do people feel when they look back at the original Candyman movies these days?
Well, one, most people don't know there are three Candyman movies. In fact, there are people who are like, there are two Candyman movies, and then you go, there are three, and they go, no way! Right? Okay, so there's that. The reason that Candyman may work, ironically, is not, I mean, I don't think it's an ironic movie. I mean, the irony of why I think this has brand name, which I don't think any movie studio would really bank on this, so they don't know it, but this is the truth, is that the sort of joke thing, like basically ripping off the Bloody Mary thing, which they have in the way you say his name five times, that is more of an urban myth now than it was, because obviously it was a made-up urban myth when it first, you know, when Clive Barker first wrote the short story, but over time, it's kind of like, it's irrespective of the movie. You don't have to watch the movie to like, oh, if you say his name in the mirror a million times, then you will get old and die. Because saying anything a million times, that would happen. But, you know, like, that's the advertising campaign, is that people kind of know that thing, you know. So all they really need to do to get people to go and watch the thing, which they won't, is put out a whole viral thing of dare you say his name in the mirror five times, and it, once that catches in people's heads, it's like a pop hook, like or a hook instead of a hand, for people who actually do know the first movie. So that's the thing, that's where it, but if they were going for that, or if they do go for that anytime around about April, May, then you can forget The Conjuring, the devil may be doing. If they don't do that, it might work, because then it's going to have to do all its own legwork. But that's the thing.
I'm going to go, because Escape Rooms are popular, so I'm going to go Escape Rooms 2.
Oh, good work. Party. I mean, you know, that's definitely a contender for Battler, for certain.
It's all, but, I'm thinking that, because I know the first film, tiny budget, and pretty much like each dollar you put on it exploded into a 10-buck note in terms of its profitability.
Yeah, so there we go. Okay, cool. That's a perfectly valid pick. Poor Candyman. There we go. So I can do this bit at the bottom, which has all the picks later on, although I might do Battlers and Turkeys now. Battlers first, probably, because they're the harder ones, and then Turkeys is just like a little bit of spite to finish the show off with. So we always like that, don't we? So Ian, what do you think is going to make the most money relative to its budget this year?
I kind of said you find the Battler in the horror section, and it's you laid an argument that not necessarily, but I think it's going to be Escape Room 2. Just to give you some numbers, the first film was made for $9 million, and it made 155 million. Like, you put down $1, it turns into $15. So in terms of return, I still think the craze is there for Escape Rooms. So I'm going
to. Okay. So the thing I want to review on Battler is there anything in comedy that I think could super perform? Well, not in February, certainly. Don't think Misbehaviour is going to go super big. King of Staten Island would have to try really hard to super outperform its own budget with such a big budget as it probably has. Yeah, there's going to be we're not going to see any Crazy Rich Asian action in this year's comedy picks, that's for certain. So obviously everything else is weighted down with having two large budgets to start with. So it is going to have to be a horror movie. This is kind of tricky, because the Escape Room 2 strategy is sound, and everything else, many of the other things, you know, like your Candyman and what have you, their budgets are likely to be too high to really go. So I am actually going to do a sort of a slightly left field thing, which I'm not expecting to win much. I'm going to go for Malignant on the grounds that just as long as it has a lot of banging, darkness, people in white makeup somewhere in the mix, and then it's there, you know, there at six, you know, with the approximate $5 to $6.5 million budget from Warner Brothers. How, I mean, IWO will absolutely detest it, but the kind of people who are paying for Paranormal Activity, etc., and the Nun, they're going to go and see it, aren't they? So, Malignant. There we go. So we're both going horror, and we're both going to that. I think we've probably made some fairly, you know, it's not going to be a terrible surprise when it's, you know, when we're both at least going to make money by backing those as battlers. Turkey wise, I mean, we've got some things that, I mean, we might have to say, let's discount Doolittle and Like a Boss from the Turkey picks.
Oh, and Birds because of Prey.
And Birds of Prey, which, yeah, to be fair, wasn't really gonna, because we all know that those have already failed. Like Doolittle was straight away. Well, like, it's Doolittle.
This is true. But even though Birds of Prey is one of the weakest opening, it's like the second worst DC movie opener ever. It has a relatively modest budget. So by the end of the day, it'll probably crawl.
Yeah, it'll probably.
So we have to do as, because the turkey is not just one that doesn't do very well. It's the one that doesn't do very well relative to its budget. So straight off the bat, let's just blast everything off our list that isn't 200 million. And so what does that shortlist give us if we do that? No Time to Die? Fast and Furious 9? That's not going to flop.
You've got all them weird family movies.
200 million. Mulan. Oh,
well,
that could
175 turkey. Million is near enough.
How do you feel about nearly 300 million for Mulan live action? How do you feel the turkeynesses of that?
Right. Now, I would be the first to say, oh, yeah, no way, man. But then the Lion King, it's just a different type of cartoon.
Kitty
Lion
Cats,
King.
Leo. It was pretty kitty cats. And it's the Lion King.
Dumbo. It underperformed, but it didn't flop. How depressing did that movie look? And how shapeless was it? Terrible. At least Mulan's going to do what Mulan does in the way that Mulan does it. Aladdin made over $1 billion with that weird Will Smith genie. And I watched it, and it was good, Aladdin. But still, I mean, it was good enough that it made over $1 billion in the box office. So what I'm going to say is, don't bet against Mulan.
Okay, Tenet, I think, is a very over budget for basically just on the word Christopher Nolan on the poster. Here's an intriguing, high-minded concept which you're going to explore for 2 hours. And I think a pull of 200 million, I think it's going to be one of his least successful films. Maybe I'm wrong. Is it going to flop? It's going to be one of his least successful. So I think it's down to Mulan or Bond. And I think people are a bit over Bond at the moment. I don't think the buzz is very good. Daniel Craig is fed up and tired. I think there's kind of a sense of people working on this have just kind of surrendered a little bit. I don't know. So I'm going to go for a Bond backlash. This could be the one that causes Bond to stop and rethink itself before it inevitably launches once more. It's going to be that or Mulan.
Okay, cool. Right. I like what you've done there. You understand Bond more than I do.
Well, I will go and see every single Bond film, but this time around, I'm like, you know what? I might just wait and see what the word of mouth is.
Oh, that's really interesting. I quit Bond on the last Pierce Brosnan. I was like, I am not doing this anymore. So I did go and see Casino Royale, weirdly, but only because I could get in for free. And it was way after. I just went, oh, I'll go and see what it's like then. I watched it and was like, it's all right. Didn't go see Quantum of Wallace. Went to see Skyfall when it had been in the cinema so long, the only time I could go and see it was with subtitles for the hard of hearing. So that was fine. Didn't go and see Spectre. No interest in that whatsoever. So, like I said,
wise choice, my friend.
Yeah, I don't even. I mean, I have seen it now because it was on streaming or whatever. But I've been wailing on this quite a lot during. I'm going to look at. I mean, sci-fi fantasy. Is there something that's really going to tank down now? I mean, yeah, Tenet is. You're right. It's a good contender for that. Morbius can't have cost enough money to be that much of a flop. Underwater has already flopped, so again, that should even be classed out as the thing. Black Widow's not going to flop. Wonder Woman 1984 is not going to flop, purely on the basis that people haven't got any comic book movies to go see this year. Free Guy is obviously going to be fine. Ghostbusters may disappoint. I think it is almost certainly is going to disappoint, but I don't think it's going to flop. But I'm obviously Fast and Furious 9 is going to be fine. We've already said that. So, this Top Gun Maverick, though, $152 million on a plane movie. Right. I think I am going to go for... I'm going to say, sorry, Cruiser, you've taken the wrong temperature. You're going to say that Bond is out of touch. I'm going to say Top Gun Maverick. I don't believe it, because one of the things about Top Gun that made it Top Gun was the fact that it had this unprecedented access to Tony Scott using footage and taking footage of actual warplanes in the mid to late 80s, where it's like, so these planes, apart from people like it because it's an action movie, it also had this kind of, well, it's very military, you see, at a time when people, you know, didn't really do that. So and you know, you had all the stuff, like you had that soundtrack. I mean, God, you must be familiar with many of the tracks off the Top Gun soundtrack.
Of course, yeah. Yes.
And even though it's not really your thing, it's not really my thing. Everybody, it's like, basically, Top Gun has the same kind of soundtrack as Footloose. Of all things. I mean, that's really weird. I just don't think people are going to get a Top Gun sequel. I don't think the point is that the reason why Mission Impossible works is because, well, Tom Cruise breaks his leg and leaves the shot in the movie, that kind of thing. You know, it's all that. It's all the, oh, we've got a plan and we're going to do a scheme and there's going to be a thing and the set piece is all like built up and Henry Cavill's got a mustache and now he's going to be the Witcher and blah blah blah. Yeah, there's all this stuff, like the buzz on Mission Impossible movies is unstoppable. A man flying a really cool plane, and I don't know if you remember this, but there was a film called Stealth a few years ago.
Oh God.
And that was three people flying really good. And then there was a film a little bit before that called Broken Arrow. And that was, obviously most of that was John Travolta jumping over rocks, but there was a stealth fighter in it. And the point is that people just regard planes as a thing that is in a movie now. And they did when Top Gun was out, but Top Gun had, you know, Tom Cruise and Kelly McGillis and their apparent incredible sexual chemistry, which over time hasn't aged well, but it was there at the time. It has, you know, the goose
Kilmer.
Thing.
I mean, it has Thin Kilmer.
It has Thin Val in his Thin Valist, you know. It has 80s music. It has homosexual subtext that people have only come to appreciate. It's aged like fine wine. It has the Tom Cruise karaoke scene. Now, if you did a Force Awakens on this and just recreated all of those elements, it still wouldn't work, because you've got a gay subtext. Everyone's got a gay subtext these days. Did you see those X-Men movies? They had a gay subtext. Okay, many of the elements. I mean, you can't do the Glenn Frey. All that kind of danger zone, all that kind of stuff. You can't do that because people don't listen to pop music that way anymore. So yeah, I'm going for Top Gun. Top Gun is Top Gun Maverick is going to just be like, oh my gosh, what is this? That's what I think.
I think there's a certain logic to what you're saying there. I mean, maybe there's an element of mean-spiritedness to me picking Bond as fan backlash or something. But yes, you're right. Bond at least has had a film out in like the last generation, whereas Top Gun hasn't. I mean, are we ready for Old Man Maverick, which is essentially what this is? So there's no momentum for this. No one was ever clamoring for where's our Top Gun sequel. Maybe they were in the early 90s. And you're right, these days, planes flying around, it's going to be a CGI plane whilst Tom Cruise grips a joystick very tightly in a small green screen cabin.
Well, this is another thing. He's not that dumb. I mean, he's a smart enough guy when it comes to all the Mission Impossible stuff.
I think if it's
going to be real footage of real planes, the problem that he's got there is that if he's not breaking his leg, nobody's going to really care that it's real planes.
Well, look, if I was given this pitch, like, Ian, this is what you're doing next, my strategy would be to make it a character movie of Maverick, because the best thing I could think to do is at least make, you know, here's an iconic character. Let's talk about him for a bit. Deconstruct him a little. Tell a good final story or something. But at the end of the day, it's Maverick from Top Gun. You know, I think he was more of a look and an attitude than some deep, complex character that needed fleshing out.
Yeah.
So I think you've made a good choice.
Cool. Right. Do you know what? Although local time here is 1 a.m, I've really enjoyed that. It's a difficult year because weirdly, I mean, one of the things that gave us our strange powers of precognition in the past couple of times we've done this has been that the film has been so utterly predictable, and where we've got blindsided, such as that whole Crazy Rich Asians Quiet Place thing, is because we just weren't looking at the right thing. We were just like, and then we learnt our lesson and then we did better. But this year is actually a little bit left field. So I've enjoyed going through that. I've enjoyed having to think about it. I've enjoyed your commentary. It's been brilliant.
It's going to be very hard to place the top movies this year. You can't stick a dart at it and go, there's your money. I mean, Fast and Furious will do well, yeah. But it's like, it's not necessarily going to be number one, though, is it?
Is Fast and Furious going to be number one over the summer? That is a really good question that I hadn't even thought of before. What's coming for it now, really, in the terms of an actual box office top 10? I mean, the thing about it is, we know that. Or I know that we're always susceptible to something that we know nothing about that the Chinese have made getting into that top 10 for the summer and sitting on top for a bit. So, yeah, is it going to be number one at the end of the year? Maybe not. Is it going to be number one at the end of the summer? It could be, you know, it very well could be. So that's my thought for them. That's my closing thought on this thing. Ian, if people want to listen to what we've said and then, you know, they want to say, look, these guys, they're on the internet and they're wrong and that doesn't usually happen. So I have to put them straight. Ian, where might they go to try and tell us where we aren't, in fact, predicting the future?
Well, one place they could go would be our Facebook page, which you can find on Facebook.com/Revenge of the 80s Kids. And that's 80s as in numbers, so 80s. Please go there and like our page. We put up links to our podcast there, as also very occasionally the small comment. But podcasts are what it's all about. And for those who want to point your web browser towards the80skids.blogspot.com, and that's 80s as in letters. I saw from memory. And there you can find a complete archive of all our shows ever that we ever did. We always stick up the new ones there as well. So that should be considered to be your podcast hub for all our shows. But Leo will also almost certainly have further information, which you shall add on to this stick here.
Well, actually, no, that's about it, really. I mean, I think what we're going to do is review the state of the 80s kids. We haven't recorded this yet. I don't know what order we're going to put them out. I think we're probably going to go summer review, and then we're going to do a metasode, because kind of that's what we did last year anyway. But we are going to take a look at the whole 80s kids business after last year. And I'm not going to go into it now because it's been a long show, and we need to sort of sign off. But yeah, so basically, things are going to probably change a bit, I think, from now on. But we are doing, you know, this because this is cool. Yeah, we're doing this, the predictions and the roundup, because it's the strongest thing that we do. It's actually got information in it. People not listening to it, I feel, are missing out. And if you haven't been listening to this, but you've weirdly got to this bit, were you going to skip the podcast back to the... Anyway, you'll work it out. So that's great, you crazy people. We'll be putting out an episode soon. But for now, I'm going to say thanks for joining us. And goodbye, Ian.
Until next time, my friends.